Overnight low temperatures will range from the teens across northern Wisconsin to the mid-30s across west-central Missouri. The forecast for east-central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy with a chance of light rain, light snow, and sleet. The high 40 and a wind out of the northwest around 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tonight becoming mostly clear with a low of 25 and a northwest wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 52. The wind will be out of the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of 37 and a southwest wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny and windy. Look for a high in the upper 40s. The wind from the west at 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to 40 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and colder with a low in the upper 20s. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 40s. Sunday night and Monday, mostly cloudy with a low Sunday night in the upper 20s and a high Monday in the low 40s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid to upper 30s. Most locations reported cloudy skies. At Rockford, 36 degrees. In Chicago, at O'Hare and in Bloomington, 34 degrees. Springfield and Mattoon reported 37 degrees. At South Bend, 33. Lafayette, 35. Indianapolis reported 34 degrees and some snow flurries. And in Terre Haute, it was 37. Willard Airport reported 36 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 31. The relative humidity, 82%. The wind out of the northwest at 15 miles per hour. The barometric pressure, 30.09 and rising. And at 12:39, 35 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. In a private ceremony at the Illinois State Capitol yesterday, Governor Pat Quinn took the historic step of repealing the death penalty. He also spared the lives of the 15 men currently sitting on death row by commuting their sentences to life in prison without parole. Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky has the story.
He says he consulted the Bible, studied law reviews, and read The Gift of Peace by Cardinal Joseph Bernardin. Governor Quinn also met with victims' families, spoke with prosecutors and police investigators, and waded through advocates' letters and emails. And for the past 2 months, Quinn says he set aside time for reflection. He'd long campaigned that criminals who'd committed the most horrific of crimes deserved to be put to death. But whatever action he took on the legislation would be a defining part of his legacy. Over the weekend, the governor says he decided what to do.
To have a consistent, perfect death penalty system, I have concluded after looking at everything I've been given that that's impossible in our state. I think it's the right and just thing to abolish the death penalty and punish those who commit heinous crimes, evil people, with life in prison.
Illinois' storied past with the death penalty played a role in his decision. Mistakes and wrongful convictions that came to light during his term as governor led George Ryan to institute a moratorium on capital punishment 11 years ago. It has stayed in place since. 20 death row inmates in Illinois have been exonerated, including Randy Seidel, who spent a dozen years on death row before his release in 2004.
And you can't have a system like that in this country or in this state that has the potential to execute an innocent person. I mean, the death penalty is irreversible.
Steidel now travels the country pushing for the abolishment of capital punishment. He calls the so-called worst of the worst cases the most vulnerable to wrongful convictions because he says there is heavy pressure on police and prosecutors to solve a case.
I was convicted of killing a young newlywed couple, stabbing them 56 times. Now, that's pretty heinous. I went from the streets to death row in 97 days. But I was innocent. So to try to have the death penalty back at in any measure is simply flawed thinking, because it's a system made up of humans, and humans have agendas, and even if prosecutors do everything above board, there's still that possibility that you got the wrong person.
When you sit across the table in the state's attorney's office with someone who's lost their family, that's a very important tool to have so that you can get the best outcome for the family in that case, the best outcome for society. And there are just a certain small number of cases where it's really the only appropriate outcome.
That's Union County State's Attorney Tyler Edmonds, who says with the change, law enforcement's losing a key tool. He says prosecutors use the threat of capital punishment as leverage. Edmonds says further reforms should have first been made to Illinois' criminal justice system before getting rid of capital punishment altogether. Since the 2000 moratorium, changes like videotaped confessions have been instituted, and already legislation's been introduced that would make further changes. GOP-backed proposals have already been filed to reverse the repeal and to reinstate the death penalty. They have the support of some crime victims' families, some of whom made emotional pleas that seeing their loved ones' murderers put to death is their only solace, the only means of closure and justice, the only way to ensure a murderer can't again kill. But for Jean Bishop, who was on hand to watch Quinn sign the law, it's the opposite. 21 years ago, her younger sister, Nancy Langert, her husband, Richard, and their unborn baby were murdered in Winnetka.
For me, killing in the name of my sister would move me closer to who the killer was and away from who my sister was. And I don't want to be like the killer. I want to be like her.
And what was your sister like?
She loved life. She was loving being pregnant and wanting to be a mother and to live this happy life that she had before it was taken from her. I don't want to participate in taking another human life.
Bishop says now that Illinois has abolished the death penalty, she'll work to see other states do the same. The new law also creates a trust fund to help support victims' families and to pay for crime and violence prevention. The man convicted of Bishop's sister's murder, David Biro, is in prison for life without parole. Bishop says for her, that's healing.
Life without parole means exactly what it says. It's a life sentence. They come out of prison in a coffin. There is no parole hearing. There's no chance he will get out.
12 inmates were put to death in Illinois since capital punishment was reinstated in the late 1970s. With Quinn's action, there will be no more. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
In Southern California, 11 Muslim college students head to court tomorrow to face charges for disrupting a speech last year by Israel's ambassador to the U.S. The local prosecutor says the students at the University of California at Irvine had no right to disrupt the event. Supporters of the students say they're being targeted for being vocal critics of Israel. NPR's Carrie Kahn reports.
The main walkway through the University of California, Irvine, is lined with students running booths for all kinds of causes.
Help support breast cancer awareness!
Missing from this gathering until lately has been the Muslim Student Union. The group has just finished a quarter-long suspension, a punishment imposed by the university after 11 Muslim students disrupted Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren's speech last year on campus. Hamza Siddiqui says it has been hard to live down the stigma of being a suspended organization.
People were afraid to wear their Muslim Student Union shirts. You know, they were afraid to, like, associate themselves with us, you know. And so that's the first thing that really affected us.
Siddiqui says the group was just regaining its footing when the local district attorney announced he was pressing criminal charges against the students, who've been dubbed the Irvine 11.
It's a misdemeanor to interrupt and disrupt a lawful meeting.
Orange County DA Tony Rukakis says the students unlawfully conspired to shut down the ambassador's speech.
You have a First Amendment right to express yourself. They certainly had every right to demonstrate and to express themselves and to get their ideas across, but this went well beyond that.
In a video of the speech posted on YouTube, the ambassador, speaking to a packed auditorium, is repeatedly shouted down by Muslim students.
My foreign minister and the person who signed off
on
the cell phone.
You, sir, are accomplices of genocide!
What happens is there are 10 distinct momentary disruptions.
Jacqueline Goodman is a lawyer for 7 of the 11 students. She declined to make any of the students available for this story. As she looks over the video of the ambassador's speech, she says it's obvious that the demonstration was peaceful. After making their statements, she says each protester promptly surrendered to police waiting in the aisles.
It's difficult for me to believe that this prosecutor could see fit to expend tens of thousands of dollars and a year's worth of resources on prosecuting a disturbance of the peace in an instance where nobody was hurt, nobody was threatened.
Goodman says the prosecution's motivation is clearly political, a charge D.A. Rukakis adamantly denies. For their part, Jewish groups on the UC Irvine campus don't want to be drawn into the controversy, but Rabbi Aaron Heyer, campus outreach director for the Simon Wiesenthal Center, says the Muslim students have yet to apologize and must be punished.
If people are allowed to shut down and conspire to shut down free speech, then we're not going to be able to exchange ideas in a free fashion.
Many faculty at UC Irvine disagree. 100 of them signed a petition asking the DA to drop the charges. They say the university's suspension of the Muslim Student Union was punishment enough. Student Hamza Siddiqui says the DA's prosecution sets a dangerous precedent. He asks what's to stop him from prosecuting all groups he doesn't agree with.
It leaves barely any room for dissent. And what is democracy without dissent?
If convicted, the students could be sentenced to as much as 6 months in jail. Carrie Kahn, NPR News.
WILL programs are made possible by Amber Glenn Alzheimer Special Care Center in Urbana. Amber Glenn offers programs designed to support residents' health and independence and to help them feel secure in their environment. More information is available at 384-0100.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 10th of March, 2011. 1876, on this day, Alexander Graham Bell made the first successful telephone call using a liquid transmitter, a diaphragm that caused a needle to vibrate in water, speaking to his assistant, Thomas Watson, who was in the next room. Alexander Graham Bell, who thought that when you answered the telephone, you shouldn't say hello, you should say ahoy. He also thought that instead of saying goodbye, you should say, that is all. It was on this day, 2006, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter reached Mars, its purpose to study the planet's land formations, weather patterns, minerals, and ice. Mars, longtime subject of fascination for authors, Ray Bradbury, C.S. Lewis, Edgar Rice Burroughs, Kim Stanley Robinson, Robert A. Heinlein all wrote books, many featuring Martians invading Earth. Robert Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land, about an orphaned Earthling raised by peaceful Martians who's now returned to Earth to transform society. H.G. Wells' story, The War of the Worlds.